the Far Out with Faust. I'm Faust Chicho, and today I am delighted to be talking with an incredible interstellar brother of mine, Daniel Scranton. Daniel is a verbal channel. He's been channeling since 2010, so 10 years and going. He's hosted hundreds of live and online group events, classes, private sessions with people all over the globe. And he also posts a daily message on his channel, on his homepage of his website. And he's done that every day since 2012. And Daniel, thanks for beaming in, brother. So much to talk about. Excited to have you on the show, man.
Excited to be here.
So before we go any further, you know, I want to read a quick excerpt from one of Daniel's daily channeled messages. And this was from a few days ago, just so our listeners, our audience have a better idea of the messages, before we get to know the messenger. So if I may, this was from, I think 3 days ago. And the title was, you are the force. Yeah. We are pleasantly surprised by humanity all the time. We feel you energetically going in a particular direction, and then you will take a sharp left turn. And most of the time, that sharp left turn will have been the result of just one of you accessing some part of yourself and integrating that part of you that you didn't even know was there. You are putting yourselves together piece by piece, and every time one of you does, another one of you gets inspired, and so on and so on. You are not only healing, integrating, and becoming, but you are also inspiring, and that's why you are so fun to watch. Those unexpected moments are happening more and more frequently because you have been forced to be more introspective, to pay more attention to what's going on inside of you. You have been guided by the universe to look within for healing, and enough of you are doing it to have that ripple effect, to be that domino that gets the chain reaction started. And we see you as ready to take humankind to the next level. We see you growing exponentially and taking more and more of your fellow humans with you. And we see that happening because you keep realizing that it is up to you, that nothing outside of you is coming to rescue humankind. The collective that you are part of will always be a reflection of what is going on inside of you. It will always be a reflection of what you still need to look at, to make peace with, to embrace, and ultimately to integrate. And as you continue to become your higher selves, piece by piece, you send out those templates, those instruction manuals to all of your fellow humans so that it can be and will be easier on them to do what you have done. Paving the way to the fifth dimension is what you all intended for this remarkable lifetime, and you've got the momentum now to carry the entirety of the human race, and there is no force in this universe that can stop you. That's just from a few days ago, but every day, Daniel has these amazing transmissions, these messages, which he is kind enough to give his time to and himself to. And I've been following them for a few years now. I love them. Sometimes I'm like, he wrote this just for me. I mean, it really feels so profoundly personal sometimes when I'm reading his messages. So this is so cool, Daniel. I'm excited to talk to you, man.
Yeah, good to be here.
Yeah, man. So for our listeners, just a little bit about your background and, you know, maybe walk us through a little bit about your journey to becoming this amazing channel and, you know, how this journey through, I know, chronic pain, and I know there was some, you know, some depression. And so, you know, there was a lot that went on. If you want to walk us through a little bit of it, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think I'll just jump to 2010. That's when everything happened, really. I was 37. So 37 years old. Nothing really that significant had happened in my life. I had been awake for 10 years. I had been meditating for 10 years, every single day. And I had to meditate because I had like chronic fatigue and stuff like that. And it was the only thing that kept me going. And I was into channeling. I was following Abraham all over the planet. I'd go on cruises with them. Abraham's a channeled entity, for those of you who don't know, like Bashar. And didn't expect anything to ever happen for me. Like, I always thought, well, maybe... This was when I was married to my first wife. you know, maybe she'll channel someday. And she was so not into it. She just did not care at all about Abraham channeling. She was a spiritual person. She was an awake person, but it was like, she got home from work and she just wanted to crash on the couch and watch TV. And I was like, I wanted someone I could talk to about all the stuff I was experiencing and felt like, you know, and I look back now to my 10-year junior self, and I think that guy didn't know anything. You know, I did not know how to be in a relationship. I was like following the Abraham like it was scripture. You know, it was like I was not equipped really to be a husband even. And so I wanted out of that marriage, which is funny, because I was definitely we both had our issues for sure, but I knew that she didn't want out. I just knew it would be really hard on her if I had said, I want a divorce. So I stayed for years longer than I should have. And I was in pain. Like you said, I had this chronic pain that I didn't know what the cause was. I thought it was a hernia. So yeah, I was in rough shape.
Yeah.
And then all this stuff starts happening. Like I'm doing Reiki on someone. I'm on one of those Abraham cruises. And because my wife wasn't into it, you know, I would just go by myself and I'd meet people and I met someone and just friends, you know, I was faithful and everything, but I met this woman and I was doing Reiki on her and my hands just moved by themselves. And I felt this jolt, like electricity moving through my body. And I was like, whoa, what's that? I like that. I want more of that. So then I just started doing Reiki all the time. I do Reiki on everybody, whether it was in person or remote. And that was around January 2010. So the whole year just started out like that. And then March comes along and I'm literally suicidal because I'm in so much pain. And I'm afraid to go to a doctor. I've been afraid of like doctors and I was afraid of dentists too. I finally started going to the dentist and got all my teeth fixed. I didn't go to a dentist for like 20 years.
Wow. Was that from when you were a kid? You just had like this fear?
No, of dentists? I mean, I didn't have unpleasant experiences. I just didn't like their solutions to the problem.
I see.
You know what I mean? And there's still like, the American Dental Association still says mercury is okay. They still do root canals. It's like all this stuff that everybody knows is bad.
Yeah.
They won't admit, you know?
I keep trying to tell people about fluoride and they're like, no, I put that in my water. I'm like, yeah, it's not good.
Many polarizing topics.
Right? I'm like, it's not really, you know.
Some people will just say like, oh, but it's good for your teeth. So
yeah.
Have in your water. Anyway, so I did finally get my teeth taken care of, but I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I assumed it was a hernia. I knew I didn't want to get a surgery. So I'm just like thinking about ending my life. It's early in March. And then like the next night I wake up, I am in this dream. I wake up and in the dream, I turn to this guy, this Abrahammer, this fellow Abraham guy who's really into aliens. And I said, I understand now about the other beings. And that was it. That was the whole dream. We were like in a desert or something. And then I wake up and I'm getting scanned, like energy's moving through my head all the way through my body from head to toe. And I'm lying in bed like this, like practically off of the bed because my back is arched and I'm like, I'm so like mesmerized by this experience and it's full ecstasy, full body ecstasy. And I'm just thinking like at first, man, this is like that healing energy that I've been summoning, you know, this is like my sort of like Abraham background thinking like, well, I've been doing all this asking and now it's coming. And at some point, I think I have the thought, I wonder what this has to do with that dream. Because it was right, it was vivid. It was right before this starts happening. And I was awake for this whole thing. Then I thought, I wonder what this has to do with aliens. And then I got a huge surge of it.
Hmm.
And I just kept thinking the word aliens.
I
jumpy at this point. I'm like, I was begging them for more. I'm like, more, please, more, please. One more time, one more time. And then I just start having a conversation in my head. So I'm like asking questions. What are you doing here? Are you here to fix me? Are you, no. Are you here to play with me? Huge surge. So then I asked them, like, would I, you know, I forget exactly what about like seeing them, actually physically seeing them, but I knew that I had to open my eyes at some point. So So the whole time my eyes are closed, I open my eyes and it like starts all over again. I don't see anything, but it's like the whole experience starts all over again with the surges of energy. So I don't even know how long that went on for, but eventually it had to stop. And I get out of bed. I like Skype with a friend of mine who I know is going to be up because she lives in Europe. And then and then I'm dedicated from that day forward. I'm like, this is what I want. I want to feel this. So when I teach people how to channel, I always tell them, like, don't try to get information. Try to get a feeling, because when I was becoming a channel and didn't even know I was becoming a channel, that's all I was doing, is reaching for a feeling. I wanted to feel that ecstasy again. I didn't realize, I wouldn't have called it this at the time, but I wanted to feel that connection again.
It's a wholeness. It's right. It's an amazing, I mean, what you're talking about is a very ecstatic feeling. But I think that was kind of the exception to the rule, which is what you found out. I mean, in your subsequent, you know, training and studying and dedication to it, you know, I know I've heard you say that you never, you know, getting that bliss and that complete ecstasy was never something that, you know, like it just became a part of your practice. That reaching for the, like, you started to enjoy the journey of it. Is that like,
yeah. Like I'd still meditate every day for an hour, like I always have been. And then I'd have the time of like, okay, I want to feel that energy again. And, it would feel like it was coming in through my back, like pins and needles, and coming forward. And it was not anywhere near what I experienced that night, but I can still, and I do every day, I go outside first thing in the morning, barefoot, stand on the grass, face the ocean. And I do a ground, like a grounding exercise. And then also it's like I'm receiving energy and I can give myself goosebumps, like no problem.
Yeah.
Just from a little bit of like,
oh, are you there?
Whole body is goosebumps right now.
Yeah, so it's funny, your mic cut out when you were, electromagnetically charging yourself. I lost you, yeah, right?
Says these are little antennae
that
pop up when we get goosebumps. So yeah, I did just become like an antenna. And I know. On the channel, I'm like this.
I know. I see.
One arm is up or the other arm is up. And it's totally not me doing it. It's like being held up. And I could never hold my arms up for an hour, but I can when I'm channeling for someone.
Yeah, I've seen you. I've seen you do it. you know, it's funny you say that, because people, you know, I think a lot of times, especially people who are just getting into meditation, that they don't realize that sometimes when we have what we call goosebumps, you know, and you can kind of remember parts, you know, memories in your life when, you know, you heard this movie score or, you know, there was a moment, you know, in a game. God.
Yep.
And you just got these. So that's a biochemical reaction to energy, right? It's such an amazing feeling. So when you do have those feelings, you know, I always encourage people who are getting into this kind of work to just, you know, see how much you can let it spread through your whole body, because it's amazing.
That's what people need to be really seeking out more, is their own personal spiritual experiences. And not dogma, not like, you know, teachings, not theories, not what other people are saying is true, but have your own experience your own truth of what this is. because you could go on the internet and find like all the stories of negative ET experiences.
Yeah.
There are plenty. Or you can have your own. You know what I mean? And I wasn't afraid. I was never afraid of channeling, and I was never afraid of ETs. And I'm lucky that I wasn't. But if all you're doing is seeking information, you can get information that tells you that, you know, the bad ETs are doing this and that, better watch out. And, you know, and then there people are walking around creating bubbles around themselves all the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, cause they feel like they need protection from negative entities. And, you know, there's a lot of superstition, but the thing about superstition and beliefs, you know, as you know, is if you put enough energy into it, you will create that reality. You know, I mean, there's a reason why the voodoo curse is so notoriously well known and why it's been shown to somehow work. And it's not so much because it's a magical spell as much as it becomes this belief that people, you know, literally, I mean, kill themselves with. I don't know how else to put it, but it's powerful.
Yeah, I've heard that too. In there's a tribe where they believe if you point a stick at someone, if like this particular like medicine man or medicine woman points a stick at you, then you're going to die. And they die.
Yeah.
Because they just start growing up. They can't hold anything down, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's the nocebo, you know, just like the placebo effect can be so powerful. The nocebo can also be, you know, I mean, I know documented medical cases where there was a misdiagnosis and they told this guy that, you know, if he made it to the new year, he would be lucky. This perfectly healthy 65-year-old grandfather. And he said he just wanted to make it to Christmas so he could give his grandson their presents. And he literally died the day after Christmas, and they found out it was a misdiagnosis.
Yeah.
I mean, almost a full year, and this dude got sicker and sicker and sicker, and they found out that he was misdiagnosed and he never had cancer.
This is why I don't like going to doctors.
No, I don't blame you, man. I mean, I don't blame you. It's a lot of people don't realize. Doctors, I mean, hospitals are businesses, man. You know, that's a topic for another podcast.
I actually did eventually choose to go to a naturopath / acupuncturist who has a baby too. So her and my wife hang out all the time now. But I went on Yelp or something, and there was her and there was one other, and they're both like 10 minutes from where I lived. I looked at their pictures, mm-hmm. and I chose Sesame based on her picture. Because she had a nice, genuine smile,
mm-hmm.
and a good like aura and energy about her. And the other woman was kind of like,
yeah.
So I'm definitely, that's not my cup of tea right there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot to be said about the intuition you have when you look at something, when you feel into something, you know, and it's not so much a superficial thing. Like you're not judging a book by its cover, but you're getting a feeling of reading about this thing and what it means for you, you know. But so before we go further, you know, I wanted to say that Daniel teaches and some amazing classes and on, you know, and it's because he's in Hawaii, it's always been online and he's gotten really good with it. But for people who hear this, who are interested in the channeling process and learning about connecting to your higher self, I highly recommend his classes. He really has one for kind of every, whatever stage you're at, if you're learning channeling. He's a wonderful teacher. And, you know, I've taken more than one of his classes and they're awesome. And, you know, you'll get a better sense of him as the podcast goes on. But I wanted to say that because, you know, since we're on the subject, you know, sometimes people hear something and they're like, oh yeah, I wish I knew how to, or could figure out how to do that, you know. We're going to include your website, and so people will be able to check it out.
Yeah. Speaking of that, you know, back in 2010, I didn't know where to go to develop this thing that was happening because I would go into these deep meditations, and I was like, I was still trying to heal myself, and so I'd be accessing all this energy, and I'd start to dry heave like I was going to throw up. But nothing came out. And this is a pretty common experience. Some people burp, but I was doing this driving thing and I thought maybe I'm going to channel. Like one of the things that was happening when I would do Reiki on someone in person was that my lips started to move. My head was going like this and my lips were moving. They were making a whispering sound. So I thought maybe I'm going to channel. And then I thought, you know, that's cool. I like the idea of me becoming a channel. And then the dry heaving happening too was like something wants to come up and out of me is what it felt like. So then I got to ask Abraham at one of their workshops, what's going on with me? Because I know that like it seems like I'm going to channel because I'm like, I do a lot of this too, like the energy to like move my face and head and neck around, but nothing was coming out. And they said, yeah, you're going to do it. You just got to stick with it. You got to work through this resistance you have to it. And, you know, you'll do it. And, you know, that was like a positive placebo or something, you know, because like,
yeah, for me,
I wasn't sure. I thought maybe I shouldn't be doing this at all because it seemed like I was trying too hard to make something happen. But just sitting there with someone and having her be patient. Through all this year, I also, my wife and I wound up splitting up, you know, which was, like I said, it was a, really a long time coming. And like 5 months later, I'm channeling, you know? So there is something to be said too for like doing the things that you need to do in your life that you don't want to face.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't want to face her heartbreak. I didn't want to face her sadness and her tears and I had to, and it sucked. But once it was over, it was like,
yeah, things, you know, really started to move. Yeah.
For myself, really. Cause when that thing happened in March, like she's like, what are you having a seizure? You know, like, she just wasn't, I couldn't really even explain to her what it meant to me to have that experience. She couldn't relate, you know? So it is important on the journey to do the things that we don't want to do sometimes, but have to do for ourselves or, you know, for whatever. Yeah.
No doubt. And I know, you know, what I noticed is when you tell the truth that you've been sitting on, things start to, the universe starts to shift for you and things start to open up for you, you know, and if you want to test that out, test it out with anything, take a chance. I mean, it's been my experience, you know, since I kind of woke up, you know, and some truths are much harder to tell than other truths, and you know, they're going to come with some discomfort, but if you're being true to yourself, you know, and whoever that person is that you're in a relationship with, or that you need to tell this to, then you're doing service to them as well. And I just, that's been my experience. So, you know, sometimes there's chaos before things become coherent again, but they do reorder, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I heard you say, Daniel, and so for our listeners, when Daniel's talking about Abraham, he's talking about Abraham Hicks, probably one of the most well-known, if not the most well-known channel. But a lot of people don't realize that Abraham Hicks, the woman who wrote The Law of Attraction, and the woman who goes and does these talks, a lot of people see the YouTube videos and they don't even realize that that's Abraham speaking through Esther. And right, that, right. You know, could that, people are like, yeah, no, I've heard of Abraham. I'm like, okay, but do you know her?
Yeah.
You know, so for our listeners, if you've ever heard of the Law of Attraction and you've, you know, you've ever seen Abraham speak through Esther Hicks, Abraham is a collective. It's an energy. It's a higher dimensional energy that came with a very specific mission. And so when Daniel talks about them, he's, you know, they have these awesome cruises and I always wanted to go to one. I love hearing her speak, hearing her channel Abraham, but I wanted to throw that in for reference.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. I met someone on one of their cruises and she and I, you know, fell in love very quickly after I split up. So we were Skyping all the time and she would be in London and I'd be in LA, and I'd be sitting there waiting for the channeling to sort of happen, and she'd be waiting for it too on the other end. And eventually it just did. And I brought through the creators, the group that I've been channeling the longest, the first time. And they said, "We are here for you." And then I don't even remember what the rest of the first transmission was. It was always question and answer in the beginning for me, though, because I don't know. I was so not confident in myself, in my channeling ability. I needed a question to pull an answer through. I couldn't just say, like, I'm going to bring through.
You couldn't do like Basharian transmissions where you're just, you know, he just goes, you know, he has this title and then he just goes off. If you've ever seen Bashar's transmissions. Yeah.
Well, that's what I do now. Like, I had to remember, you said at the beginning, I've been doing this in 2012. That's when I started. I was like, and I was actually inspired by what Esther was doing with Abraham. She was putting out a daily quote, daily message. They're much shorter than the ones that I do. But you can sign up for her email list and you'll get an email every day with a short message from Abraham. And I was inspired by that. And I said, I want to do that. And that'll be a good way for me to keep myself sharp. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like anything, it's a muscle. You got to exercise it. So I started doing it every day. And now I'm channeling the messages from the Arcturian Council.
It's funny that you mentioned the Arcturian Council, and you know, you hear the word council and you're like, huh? You know, and then I saw what was on the news the other day, was 2 days ago, was about Haim Eshed. I don't know if you saw, you probably don't watch, I don't really watch the news either. That's the head of the Israeli space security who came forward and stated that, well, ETs are among us, which to some people is still news. And that he also said some, of course, it became controversial because he stated that Trump was on the verge of revealing this to the public, but the Galactic Federation asked him to wait and let people calm down first, because they didn't want a mass hysteria. And so I was like, man, I'm going to ask Daniel about this, because first of all, you know, I'm sure you can talk about this more too. You know, there's more than one Galactic Federation operating, you know. And so when this guy refers to a Galactic Federation, who knows which one he's talking about, but what are your thoughts on that, when, if you heard about that?
I did hear about it, and people, of course, send me stuff like that all the time, especially because of my last transmission from the Arcturians, about full ET contact. And that's what I would like to speak more about, because I don't know. I don't like speculating. I stopped watching Ancient Aliens because I was like, these guys are just guessing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is not, I don't get a lot out of that. I don't get a lot out of people just speculating, and I don't know who's got what agenda and so on with what gets put out there. So when the Arcturians bring through a message and they say, you're ready. Like, if you know that aliens exist, like you and I, and probably everyone watching this knows, then have your own experiences, like you're ready to have them. You don't have to wait. And in fact, that message seemed to be in response to that, what came out on the news from the Israeli. So yeah, I think that they're saying to us, like, you are ready, even if not everyone is.
Yeah.
You're ready to have your own experiences, and to create those realities is well within your ability, and you don't have to wait for everyone else to be ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people who aren't waiting, but,
well, yeah, there's a lot of people who want to be, you know, rescued and all this stuff. And it's like, I think there needs to be more of a conversation about, like, what can I do to, like, make myself readier, you know, what can I do to, like in that one that you read at the beginning, explore more of my inner realm and what's going on inside of me and what I need to heal and what I need to embrace and integrate. Because if all you're going to do is look outside of yourself for like what this person is saying and that person is saying is going to happen, then you're not, there's no emphasis in any of those messages, which is why I never get into that stuff about like, well, what can you do as an individual to be a better person or to like make yourself be in a higher vibration? And that's the other thing that I wanted to say about channeling is, as we were talking earlier about like who you're going to channel, is mm-hmm. is a good being, bad being. Well, yeah. If you're focusing on raising your vibration, which means, you know, being in more of a love state, being in more of a joy state, then you're only going to be able to connect with beings who have that similar vibration. Mm-hmm. So then you don't have to worry about attracting a reptilian, you know, overlord, warlord guy.
Some of the exact same thing I said to my twin brother. Wait, I had this exact conversation with my twin brother. He's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I was like, dude, trust me. You know, like there's nothing, there's no five general. I don't even know what you're talking about. Five generals are waiting for you. Like, I was like, don't worry. I'm fine. I'm like,
yeah, even if the reptilian forces are out there and they want to control and manipulate, you don't have to align with that. You know what I mean? You align with what you want. You want to swerve over to the good feeling experiences, because of course, like if you asked somebody, are ETs good or bad? Well, if I say to you, are humans good or bad? There are humans doing terrible, terrible things to other humans. And then there are humans who are saints, you know. So we run the spectrum, they run the spectrum. So you want to connect with the ones that feel good to you. So that's the type of readiness too. Not even just like the fear, which can come up, which Bashar says, you know, will come up in most people, whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
So you're faced with like these very strange looking beings standing over. You're probably going to feel afraid. So it
reminds me of Rob. I know your friends. I know you're close with Rob as well. Rob Gauthier's story when he met Treb. Did you ever hear him tell a story when he was when he kind of astral projected into Treb's?
No.
Oh man, you got. I'm not gonna tell it because it's a little long, but it is hilarious. It's amazing. It's it would have scared most people. You know,
and it's good that you brought that up because Treb is a friendly reptilian.
Yes, he is.
So then you know, again, like, are all reptilians bad? I've heard Wendy Kennedy, another great channeler, say there's a lot of lovely Anunnaki.
Yeah.
You know? So you're going to throw everybody under the bus if they are a gray alien. Well, the Zetas are gray, mm-hmm. but and then there's other grays. And so the Zetas don't want us to refer to them as only grays, because then you're saying, you know, you're not making a distinction between who they are and the work they've done on themselves to grow and have emotional bodies again and create these hybrid races with us.
Can you talk a little bit about that for everyone listening? You know, the history of, I mean, I think the grays are one of the most commonly used phrases, you know, when we're talking about, I don't even like the word aliens, but we're talking about extraterrestrials, and the Anunnaki, people hear that a lot, you know. Can you give everyone a quick little history lesson, you know, when you say they've worked on themselves?
I can give people a history lesson on Anunnaki because I don't know what I know the accepted story of the Anunnaki. Right. They were bad, but I don't know if that's even true, because I've heard that Zachary Sitchin, the guy who wrote the
12th Planet,
was supposedly being controlled by others, and that was all false information. So I don't know.
Oh, I never heard that. Yeah.
True, and what's not true. when it comes to them. But I do know that also that that word can just mean like extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. So then again, are you lumping a bunch of extraterrestrials together in, and it's not really a race?
Yeah.
So then there.
Like when you talk about the Zetas, you know, yeah. and you know the work that they've done on themselves, like you know, what did you mean when you said that?
Well, the Zetas are, to my knowledge, the beings that were working on me that night when I had my experience. That's what I get. That's what others have said to me about it, including Bashar. Mm-hmm. When I asked Bashar about it, And there's another beautiful channeler named Lisa Royal Holt, who you should interview if you get a chance to.
Yeah.
Who does this galactic history. She has this galactic history recording that I listen to over and over and over again. And in that, it talks about, and Bashar talks about the Zetas too, as these beings that lost their ability to feel emotion. So they were like the Vulcans of Star Trek. You know, suppress emotion because the mind should be what, you know, dictates our decisions.
Intellect, right? And technology. Yeah.
And technology. The technology emphasis is not so much there in the Star Trek lore, but with the Zetas, yeah, they were very much that going down that path that humanity sometimes seems like we're going down, where technology is everything. And you know, and who cares about the environment? You know, the earth isn't important as long as we have our latest gadgets, you know. And they did that to the point where they polluted their planet. It was uninhabitable. They couldn't reproduce anymore, which we see happening to us too with all the plastics.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're finding plastic in human cadavers, like every human cadaver, they look for it and they find plastic in.
Mm-hmm.
And that lowers sperm count. And so we're, you know, maybe gradually getting to this point too, where it's getting harder and harder for people.
Literally, infertility is becoming, it's not as bad as cancer, but I think it's about one in four men now. And it's been exponentially increasing, just like cancer. And I mean, look, I think we contribute to these things in a large variety of ways, you know, and plastic and that kind of pollution is one of them. You know, so I mean, like, and I believe that the reason why they have connected is not only to, you know, ensure their race's survival, but and we can get into some of that as well, but also because it's a cautionary tale for humanity not to go down that route. You know, I mean, it's almost in the psyche, it's almost in the consciousness, it's almost in the collective, you know, like people have an idea that is not, we don't want to go down that route. It's, I don't know how else to explain it, you know, but I feel like it's there.
Definitely. Definitely. And there's also been the explanation about these early abduction experiences or visitation experiences that we needed them. We needed to face those fears, that they helped us process a lot of our collective fears and individual fears about ETs and negative ET experiences. And so while some people, you know, woke up in the middle of it and they're paralyzed and they had these horrible traumatic experiences, It's not, I hope it doesn't sound callous for me to say that person needed to have that experience, but that's what I believe is true. And, you know, obviously everyone who ever experiences a trauma deserves our compassion and send as much love and healing energy to that person as well. But we're always creating these experiences because we need them.
Yeah.
And the Zetas, also, because they were so cut off from their emotions, they didn't necessarily even realize the impact they were having on people emotionally, because it was like emotions were not part of their.
That never even occurred to me. I didn't even consider that aspect of it. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So the story is, and it's a story that this is a story that's been told by many, many different sources. And I've actually channeled the Zetas myself, and I wasn't even trying to. So that's how you know you're really channeling something. Yeah. You're not even reaching for Zetas, and you've got Zetas coming through. They needed our DNA. We are emotional beings. We're very emotional.
That's for sure. So
take the eggs, take the sperm, and take the DNA from the human, splice it with the Zeta, bring it together in like a test tube baby type environment, you know, on a ship, and you create a hybrid race, which is what they've done, which is what has resulted in the Bashar race, the Sasani, mm-hmm. and the Yael.
Yael, yeah.
Several others have been born out of that. So that's the story. And then they have had to take care of these children that were born. And these children were very emotional. So the children basically taught the Zetas how to feel again.
That's right. They rekindled the emotion in them. Yeah. That was the payback, the gift that they gave, which is kind of a beautiful story. I think, you know, when you think about this race that in this last ditch effort, you know, found a way to this population, to this planet, which is, you know, another version of them, but they know that having, you know, been in a more advanced stage of evolution, and then only to be kind of reconciled and into a state of more love and able to feel that again. It's pretty, I mean, kids will make you emotional. I don't know. You know, they have that ability. I mean, they're perfect examples of how emotional we are, and they'll make you emotional one way or the other. You know, it's the full spectrum. So
that's for sure. We had our daughter in the next room. She was born in the house. And so I was right there behind my wife while she delivered in the bed that she was probably conceived in. And then they handed me this baby, right after she was born. And I bawled. I let out more tears and cried harder than I probably have in, I don't even know how long, probably since my cat, Mrs. Williams, died back in 2000. Something else had happened. No, that was 2011, I think, or 12. Yeah.
That year, yeah.
But it was amazing because I never thought I even wanted kids. You know, I was like going along with it.
Yeah.
But I never thought I wanted a child. And now that we have her and she's about 17 months old, it's like, that's all I want to do is spend time with her.
Yeah. Oh, I understand, man. You know, and then, you know, I have two, and you know, you're so in love with your first one, and you just think to yourself, man, because we were going to have another one, and we found out it was a boy, and I was like, man, I feel bad for this second boy. There's just no way I could love another boy as much as I love this, for, you know, this first one is just my whole heart, you know? And then this magical thing happens, and your love divides perfectly evenly, you know, and like you just couldn't imagine it the day before, and then it happens, and you're looking at this baby and you're like, oh my God, you know, it's so magical. It's such a gift. Yeah. So it's crazy. But it's emotion, man. You know, it's one of the things that we're blessed with. And also that we struggle the most with is,
yeah, I'd say what it's all about, really. Mm-hmm. Why we're here, what, you know, the answer to that age old question, why are we here? Why do we exist? I think it's to feel, because everything has that potential to cause you to feel something, whether you're triggered in a negative way or, you know, you get that positive feeling, warm feeling coming up inside of you. Either way, it's everything has that potential. And, you know, hopefully, eventually you realize, oh, I can choose how I want to feel by choosing what I focus on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's a life lesson, you know, that some people some people will always believe that it's happening to them, and other people will realize at some point that it's not, that they're happening to it. And so it does become a choice. but not everyone realizes it. You know, I wanted to go back real quick because I realized that I never really got your opinion on, you know, who this guy was talking about when he said that the Galactic Federation told, I don't know, Trump and Israel.
I think every president, every prime minister, every premier, everyone who's the head of a big country has known about ETs since, you know, the 40s or maybe even earlier. So yeah. I don't think it's big news, but I don't know. The idea that we're not ready, I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Well,
as a collective, we're not. As individuals, you probably are. I mean, look. I mean,
yeah. I was saying, I said the exact thing yesterday.
The things that I love about what I get to do for a living is I get to have these sessions with people where they're talking about their ET experiences, and I've heard so many. I've heard so many accounts of personal ET experiences to the point where, like, that's what's more interesting to me than all the global stuff. That's all speculation, such all wild theories and stuff, because I don't know the Galactic Federation. I've never channeled them. I don't want to channel them because
So
it's kind of like, it's like if someone asks me to channel the Anunnaki, it's like, I don't really want to, you know, there's too much. There's too much that's already been said and felt and believed that, you know, I don't want to be the one to try to clear all that up.
Yeah, it's definitely a burden and responsibility there. There's so much history with the Anunnaki and, you know, but.
I got some flack for channeling the Zetas when that happened.
Oh, because of the abduction. Well, because of the.
Some people were not happy to see that.
I mean, and people get very, you know, I mean, I guess if you've had an experience, you don't. It's like you said, you got to have compassion for people who have had these negative experiences. But at the same time, if you want to go on a, you know, on a greater perspective, it, you know, we do make these contracts. I mean, many of us believe in, you know, the notion of contracts and the notion of agreements that you make before, you know, I mean, there's a wonderful parable in Neil Donald Walsh's books about, you know, the little soul in the sun. And, you know, the little soul is a candle that wants to separate from the sun and, you know, wants to experience forgiveness. And so he comes down to earth, but he's like, but wait a minute, you know, God says, who are you going to forgive? And he says, the little soul says, I don't know. And another little soul comes forward and says, I'll be the bad guy this time. Okay. We've done this before. You just don't remember, but you have to remember to forgive me this time when I do.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you can experience yourself as one who forgives. And so they made the deal to go down and do it again, you know? And I feel like that, you know, and if you look at Jesus and Judas and the nature of that relationship, which is so notorious now, Judas the betrayer, you know, it's almost like that helps me believe that we must have these agreements, you know, even on that level, because Judas had to have signed up for that. You know what I'm saying? If that part of the story is true, which according to a lot of history, you know, it is there. You know, there was a man who was who walked and who was betrayed and was kind of sold out where he was going to be for some money. And they did call that dude Judas. At least that's my understanding of it. So, but it makes me believe that, you know, you do go into these lives, these incarnations with an idea of what you've set out to accomplish, you know, and sometimes that's being, quote, the bad guy, but that's just another version of you. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's exactly what it is. Like you said, one lifetime, if you and I got together and I screwed you over out of some money, then in another lifetime, you screwed me over out of some money. And so now we both know what that feels like to be the screwer and the screwy. And hopefully then when you get to feel what it feels like to be on the other side of it, then you are like, oh, this feels terrible. I don't want anyone to feel this as well. You know, I want, or you'll have compassion because now you've experienced it, like, oh, like, it's so much easier to have compassion for someone when you've experienced it. And that's one of the problems that I think white people are having right now, like trying to understand what racism is like for other people.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know.
No, there's a big, there's a big disconnect there. And that's, and it's in part, it's an innocent one, you know, because it takes a lot of imagination and empathy to imagine or remember, you know, a time when you were not in this, you know, Caucasian, not in this European body. But at the same time, you know, most people don't, they don't quite understand that they have lived this before. And so they don't kind of reach into those greater memories to imagine what it's like. And so I see people and I, you know, it's crazy because it's true on both sides. You know, when white people say that they don't have any experience of racism and they don't have it in their life. And so for them, it doesn't exist. I mean, in a lot of true ways that you can't just say, well, you don't know, you know, it's for them, that's their truth. And there's no doubt that, you know, racism is still alive and happens in this planet and is, you know, very much a part of the way that this, especially in Western structure of society has been built up. You know, there is a racist element in it. How can you deny that? I mean, look at what happened. Just look at history. And so you have both sides in this modern day with very valid points of view and perspectives. And so it's hard because they're so oppositional and polarizing. It's hard for people to reconcile that. And so there's a lot of division and hatred. And it's a shame to see that.
I think that's one of the great things that's happening right now, especially during the pandemic, is the podcast world. I listen to podcasts all the time. I love podcasts. And I listened to a podcast not too long ago with Chris Rock because I love comedians. I think comedians have this amazing voice and that they're so much good with their, you know, making fun of things and trying to make light of things. And Chris Rock was talking about the racism that he experienced and I never knew that. I never had heard him talk about it before, but hearing him talk about what he faced, what his father faced, it was so unbelievable and so upsetting. And, you know, and you'll just see story after story of people coming out saying, yeah, I get pulled over for no reason all the time if they're a person of color. So it's like that person, again, if you get interested in people that are different from you and interested in their stories, then at least you can realize like, oh, that people are really suffering that are not as fortunate as I am. And maybe what we just need to do is listen and have compassion and not go immediately to like, how are we going to fix this?
Because right.
God only knows how we're going to fix it. But yeah, that's the first step, is like admitting there's a problem, like with alcohol or drugs. You know, first you have to admit you have a problem.
Yeah, man. There's a fine line there, you know. There's a lot of, you know, what they call spiritual bypassing that happens. And bypassing in general, you know, you see it in all facets. And now my dog is going to, hold on one second. You know, like even with this pandemic on both sides, you see people who, they don't want to look at some information. They just want to focus on what they want to focus on. And so you have both sides being like, you know, putting up a wall and, you know, and you have companies enabling massive walls in society by saying, it's okay, we don't want you to look at that information either. So we're just going to censor it because all of a sudden we're concerned about your health, which is another joke, you know, community guidelines, and how they've gotten into what they're now concerned about is pretty amazing evolution there on some of the sites that we use. But That again is another podcast. We're not going to get into that. We're going to stick to more interesting and deeper topics, because I want to get into it with you about, you know, you also channel Archangel Michael, Archangel Gabriel. You've channeled, and also Daniel has some amazing meditations, and one of the things Daniel does that I love is he channels a meditation through one of his connections, one of his entities, one of his beings, one of his collectives. And some of them are, you know, I have a bunch of them, and I listen to them often. And it's just very awesome that you thought to do that, that you do that, you know, and you allow them to guide the meditation. So, you know, there's one meditation I love that that Kuan Yin comes through you, and you know, another one that the Buddha comes through you. And it's just this amazing, you know, and it's for people who don't have a lot of time. It's like most of them are 15-minute meditations, you know, they're, so it's not much of a time commitment, but it's an epic 15-minute journey. And I love that about you, man. And I, you know, it's just crazy to me that Archangel Michael, Archangel Gabriel, these beings, well, we've come to know them as these kind of male personality because of religious dogma and because of some of the lore that goes along with that. But, and so like, this is where kind of, you know, some religious concepts, and you have some of the, you know, extraterrestrial ideas that they intersect in this crazy way. And like, you're another great example of how, you know, you may have a session in the morning where you're channeling Archangel Michael for someone, and then another one at that evening where you're bringing through, you know, a collective from Orion, you know, the Syrians or something like that, which is just, it's mind-boggling to me. So I wanted to ask you if you would talk a little bit about the difference in those energies and how you see, you know, the difference.
Well, it was really shocking to me, first of all, to channel. Archangel Michael came through me during a Nora Herald retreat that I was attending, where I was just sitting there and she was channeling him. And I was like, I could feel the presence of them. I refer to them as, you know, a collective, and they refer themselves as a collective. So I felt the Archangel Michael presence, and I knew I was going to channel. And then all of a sudden she goes, does anyone want to channel? And I raised my hand and I just channeled a light language. So that was the first time I channeled Michael. And then I had to go off and do my own work of tuning into that bandwidth to be able to channel. But I've always felt like when I'm hiking by myself, for example, or if I'm taking a shower, sometimes they just come through me and they'll just start saying yes over and over again. And that's just, so I do have this connection to Michael that I didn't even know about growing up Catholic. I didn't have any sort of concept of the archangels or what they were about. But I think that even in, you're talking about the kind of weirdness of the connection between religion and aliens and stuff, but I think that even what's even more interesting or as interesting is that I think Archangel Michael is talked about in the Quran. I was watching a show on Hulu that is amazingly brilliant called Rami, R-A-M-Y. And they talk, and it's about a guy who grows up Muslim in the Muslim faith in this country and, you know, lives through 9/11 as a little boy and everything and has to experience all that. And he, at some point, they talk about how Jesus is in the Quran, talked about in the Quran. They believe Jesus is coming back. Like, you would never know that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, no one would, I don't know, like, how anyone, like, I didn't know that for sure. And I lost my screen. I got like a little pop-up from Adobe.
Oh, well, I can a little. Would you like to download Flash Player?
Yeah, like I can see that. So I can see little versions of us. Anyway, okay. So yeah, like the fact that these three major religions all came from this one person named Abraham.
Yeah. You know,
which is no relation.
Right. No relation to everyone
talking about, but yes. Yeah, like Judaism, Islam, Christianity, they're all so like this. And it's like,
yeah, it's mind-boggling. They like, fought so much.
Yeah. Know? So it's so bizarre that there's been so many wars fought over like who's got the right recipe here.
Right.
You know, for salvation or whatever. And so, yeah, people talk about how when there's certain references in the Bible, they think that they're really referring to aliens and not angels.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see that.
And interpreted as angels over the years or something. So there's a good, you know, there's very good speculation.
Yeah.
about that. But it seems like it probably, I mean, I'm sure they've been intervening on Earth for a very long time. And It's all intertwined. It's all, we don't have these hard lines separating us that we think we do. And there's really no separation between spirituality and science. Even it's like, that's how I actually woke up is through Deepak Chopra. You know, Deepak Chopra woke me up because of his way of teaching about spirituality by using science. And that's what it was that convinced me that there was something more going on than what I knew about and believed.
It's funny you say that. You know, I know a lot of people who were woken up by Dr. Joe Dispenza, who, you know, is also a doctor. He was a chiropractor and amazing spiritual, you know, teacher. And a lot of people, you know, they hear the science and they hear the science behind the neuroplasticity and the body's ability to heal itself. And then they hear stories about people who have actually done it. And I have friends who have experienced tremendous healings using his techniques, meditation techniques, and allowing the body to do what it kind of naturally knows how to do and understanding that it can. But it's always amazing to me how we've come into this age of science. You know, science is everything. It's all you hear now on the news. And, you know, I mean, there's a great wave of people who are following the science, at least what they believe is that what they're being told is the science. And other people who are saying, no, this is the science. And all of a sudden now science has become this, this new religion, for me, you can't separate the two. You know, spirituality and science have become intertwined. And I think the more we embrace that as a society, the more we're going to see that we are all connected, literally, not just metaphysically or metaphorically, but literally we are all connected. And I think that's going to be really when humanity kind of just, you know, takes off, when we embrace what science really is, which is this perfect blend of spirituality and understanding what we are and where we are in the universe with everything else. That's going to be the golden age, I think, when that happens for us.
We do live in a dualistic universe. It's a universe that's set up to have hot and cold, up and down, on and off, left and right, you know, black and white, good and bad, all these different things. That's how the universe was set up. That's what we were supposed to have, more than one perspective. We're not supposed to just all agree on everything. It's just what we do with the fact that we don't agree. That's the important thing is like, well, can you at least acknowledge that this other perspective has some validity to it? Or are you just going to try to convert this person to thinking the way that you think about it? Or, you know, because if you can see that the two different perspectives, let's call them, can come together and create something better. You know, if you can see how like, all right, well, let's not just ignore this or pretend it doesn't exist or try to squash it out, but let's like listen to this other side and see where we could come together and create something even better with the two perspectives coexisting. Then I think you're also really getting to what all this is about too, which is like accepting and unconditional love. And like you were saying, forgiveness, instead of like, well, that's just wrong. And so I just don't accept that as being a truth.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And it's, you know, it's easier said than done. And there's a lot of justification for why that is. And everybody has very strong reasons that they believe in. And so, you know, it doesn't take people very long to get very emotional and dig their heels in with their point. You know, I see it happening with, you know, you have both sides, not to get political, but, you know, you have one side saying, stay home, save lives. And they have a valid belief in saying that. And you have another group of people saying, I can't stay home. I have to save lives. I have to feed my children and my family. I can't just not supply and do what I need to do in order to support myself and my family. And those people have lives, which they feel are at risk, and they're valid. And so you have both sides pointing at each other and thinking that for some reason, the lives on their end are more important than the lives on those end. And I'm like, hey guys, what if we decided we would figure out a plan where everyone can save each other's lives, you know, like, or, you know, do what they needed to do to feel like they were anyway. Is there not a scenario that we could come up with that works? Like, I mean, if we stop fighting and put our minds together, I bet there would be. And, but it, you know, when you kind of take a step back and you're looking at it, and you don't want to pass judgment on who's right and who's wrong, you can see how both sides are right, you know? And so, but it's compromise. That's the problem. It's the challenge, you know?
Yeah. Coming together and being willing to sit at the table with someone who you disagree with and say, all right, let's see if we can hash this out.
Yeah. I mean, government doesn't help, but they've kind of gotten really good at the opposite of that. Anyway, I see a future one day when we don't need a government in place, right, so much as just you know, and I feel like, you know, my sense is that, you know, a lot of civilizations don't have this kind of ruling government, you know. I mean, they don't even have like this deity that they hold up as quote God, you know, because they understand that the piece of them that is alive right now is God, you know. I mean, that's my sense and my intuition about some of the civilizations out there that, you know, maybe one day humanity will be in greater touch with. But
I think so. I think it's going to happen pretty quick, pretty soon.
I hope so, man. What's your contact window? Everyone loves asking Bashar this, you know, what's the window of contact? Has it moved? And Bashar's like,
I think it's coming. I think, like I said, what I channeled last night, everybody has the opportunity to do it right now. So for the mass world, that line probably is moving all the time, in terms of like our readiness as a global community. But I do think it's definitely in this decade.
Awesome, man. Yeah. I have a buddy who we had a big long discussion about UFOs, and I still have one or two friends who they're on the fence. They just don't believe, because they're caught up in the whole space time thing. And like, you know, the fact that they understand,
they couldn't get here.
They were like, if they would have to have left 4 million years ago to arrive. I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand.
wormholes, there's dimensions, there's portals, there's so many different ways.
I know. And so from their perspective, it would be crazy if they had to take a jet here from freaking, you know, it would be next to impossible for them to arrive, you know, on this day if they left, I don't know how many millions of years ago. Yeah, they have a good point, but I'm like, that's not how it travels, you know? But it's funny because the Pentagon, you know, recently there's been a lot of disclosures that happening. And I'm like reminding people that, hey, the government's given you permission to believe in UFOs now. Don't you feel differently about it? And some people do. Some people are like, oh, well, I guess it's real. I mean, it's crazy to me. I'm like, why would you wait for someone to tell you that you can believe something or not? I don't know.
True, yeah. But I also understand skepticism because I used to be a skeptic about a lot of things. And I think there's a healthy amount of skepticism. And that's why people, like when I had my experience with the ETs in the middle of the night, you know, I was, one of the things that was really interesting about it for me is that I was one of these people that I didn't think that they mattered. I knew they existed, but I didn't think it mattered to us that they existed. Like that they were in any way part of our story here on Earth. So then I have my own experience and then all that changes. And I think that's what it's really going to take, not disclosure, not people in, you know, with, you know, titles after their name coming out and saying, this is what's happening, but people having their own experiences, that's really what's going to change people's minds and get them to maybe explore something in the way that I did. Whereas I was just happy, like, I probably would have stuck with the Abraham teachings and kept going down that path for a long time were it not for that experience, which led me to say, well, I want to kind of know more about what's going on with the ETs now. So let me get into Bashar and these other people who are channeling ETs. And it definitely changed a lot for me and opened me up a lot that I was able to do that before I started channeling ETs myself.
Yeah, you know, there's a wealth of material out there. You know, if you're interested in, and I just encourage people to look past some of the, I mean, because for years now, you know, many of us, people who are closer to, you know, our age, Daniel, we, you know, there's been a lot of propaganda put out about people who talk about UFOs or aliens and them being crazy in some way. And so, you know, even now with, you know, the Pentagon releasing materials and videos and then coming out and actually saying, well, we actually do have recovered spacecraft. We're just going to let you know that in the middle of a pandemic when no one's paying attention. You know, and of course, everyone, no one even bothered to like to talk about it. They were like, oh, whatever. Anyway, with COVID. And I was like,
that part about the recovered spacecraft.
Yeah, the New York, I mean, they admitted that they had recovered spacecraft, which, quote, they said could not have been made on this world. And no one even, this is how consumed everyone is with this thing happening. No one even blinked an eye. No one was even talking about it, you know.
Well, you know that they've also said, scientists have also said, there's no way octopus are from here.
Yeah, there's
no way that they could be of this Earth.
Yeah, their DNA is so different than nearly every other species on this planet. Isn't it something crazy like that? Like,
yeah, it's so different, and they have like so many hearts and everything. And
so, the other thing I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, you see more and more people kind of talking about fifth dimension, and you know, I see these things on friends who have never been into this stuff posting memes like with this, you know, paragraph from the Palladians, and I'm like, huh? I'm like, do you know what you know about the Palladians? Like, what's up with that? And then I see other people probably reading that and being like, God, that's really well written. That's it really resonates. But what's a Palladian? You know, because I had that experience. I would be reading something. And I'm like, God, that's beautiful. You know, and that's so true. But what the hell's what are the Palladians? You know what I mean? Like, I kind of had to Google it, you know, and I feel like that happens, you know, with more and more people posting and sharing information. People come across these names and they don't really know what that is. And so I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. As far as the Palladians go and the Syrians and how, you know, instrumental they may have been in our seeding, the seeding of this planet and the seeding of this race called humans. You know, what have you learned about those two races? And, you know, I know they're some of the most important races next to the Arcturians and but like, could you give us a little bit of the inside information on that?
Well, it's funny when you say, cause we've been talking about this topic a little bit. So it's interesting that come to this point too, where, you know, we've talked about how you can't just say the Greys, or you can't just make general statements about all extraterrestrials either. And the same would be true of Pleiadians, Syrians, Lyrans. They, it depends on what dimension you're talking about. You know what I mean? Like,
I know what you mean, but can you talk more about it?
So we are fourth dimensional human beings. And so what that means is we exist in a frequency range, which allows us to see and touch and hear and smell things that are of that frequency range. That's what gives us our experiences that I think everybody probably knows who's watching this, but you know, this computer is energy that's vibrating at a particular frequency that gives it its form and its function and everything. And I'm energy that's vibrating at a particular frequency that allows me to interact with the computer, the plant that's over there that you can't see, and so on. And the best example of this that we all know is with the dog whistle. So we've got a dog, and you know, me and my dog, let's say, are agreeing that this is reality. There's a ball, there's food, there's a bone. But then the dog can hear something when I blow on the dog whistle that I can't, because they have a range of hearing that allows them to go up to that higher frequency of the dog whistle and perceive it. So where are these extraterrestrials and how did they get here? And all? Well, they are right here in the same, occupying the same space, vibrating at a different frequency so that we don't perceive them. We don't see them, hear them, touch them, smell them. And unless we are able to raise our vibration, which is what I would say channeling really is. It's like if I were able to do something to myself to be able to hear that dog whistle by altering my consciousness, because now I'm operating at the same frequency as the dog whistle sound. So that's basically the dimensional breakdown. It's not, dimension's not a place. It's a vibrational frequency that where you're in a range. So that the third dimension has a range of frequencies and the fourth dimension, and they kind of like overlap. And then I think the fifth dimension also overlaps with the fourth, so that you can have a third dimensional experience one moment where you're dealing with like taxes, and then the next moment you go and meditate and you're having a fifth dimensional experience where you're like experiencing oneness with all beings or something. And
yeah. But then you come back into your car and you're in traffic and you're like,
right, back in the third. Yeah. So these ETs, they, from Sirius, from Orion, from Andromeda, wherever they're from, they are not all, you know, the same. It depends on where, what they're vibrating at. And that would determine their dimension, as we call it. Some people call it density. I think density is just a way of like describing a state of matter. You know, we have like solid, liquid, gas. Yeah. So the gas is less dense than the solid. So the gas, you know, the gas is more flexible and can do more and move around more. And that's kind of like when you go up in density, you're becoming that lighter state of matter where you're not really, you don't have this dense physical form that, you know, has all these limitations and confines. My understanding is there are certain themes that go with each star system that we talk about that they're exploring there. Like I would say Earth is exploring emotion and definitely exploring polarity, especially at this time that we were talking about how polarized can you get and how separate from God can a person feel?
Mm-hmm.
That's another theme that's been explored on Earth. Like how far can I put this entity outside of myself that really is right here if mm-hmm. I were just able to tune in and feel that. My understanding is, you know, they've been coming and working with us at times, it really interfering more so than we're experimenting. Some I think have been trying to be helpful and not knowing that they weren't actually being helpful, but you know, it all wound up with us being where we are right now. So who are we to like complain or question the that master plan that we're
yeah.
a part of? But I think that another really interesting thing about Earth is that we are a very diverse planet in terms of, you know, having birds and reptiles and amphibians and cats and dogs and whales and dolphins and all these different beings that kind of like represent insects too.
Don't forget about insects. Yeah.
Of aliens that are out there where they're the dominant species.
Yeah, this is
a world out there in space, you know, where there's like a humanoid version,
right,
of a bird, you know, so you have the avian beings that
right.
are walking on two legs and have two arms and a head like ours, but they also have like a beak and feathers, you know.
Right.
And all these, you know, all of it is like, again, it's like this, it's not as separate as we think. And that's another point I think that this hybridization program is going to deliver home to everyone is like, oh, you think of aliens as like really different from you. Well, here's some aliens that are your kids.
Say hello.
They're your offspring.
Yeah.
They're not that different from you. And in a sense, you know, we're the kids of somebody else who came and planted seeds and,
yeah,
you know, wanted us to develop in a way that would be a lot faster than the Darwinian way.
Well, sometimes people say, well, do you think that's just a future version of us that you're seeing when you see a UFO? And in a lot of ways, I think sometimes there's a lot of truth to that, you know. Yeah. I mean, I know you have a UFO story, Daniel, so Tell me your UFO story, and then let me know what you think about that idea that these UFOs in the sky may be just a future version of people from Earth.
Well, the interesting thing about my story, it's not a great story, but the timing of it was really interesting because it was June 21st, 2012, and Bashar and others were saying that date was the end of the quarantine that we were in.
And yeah, the first quarantine, not this quarantine. the interstellar quarantine.
Right. Like no one's allowed to come in unless you've got personal business.
That's right.
Like a family member there on Earth kind of thing. That was the deal with the quarantine.
And that was from what they said happened with the Anunnaki, correct? For our listeners.
Well, just, too many beings coming in and messing with us and not really respecting us and allowing us to have our own
evolution. Yeah.
So on that day, I went to go see a Nora Herald workshop in person and drove up from Santa Monica to Ojai, which is like an hour drive. And so went to that with a couple friends, was driving back in my car on like, I think the 101 freeway. And this ship came right at my car. And it was small. It was like a beach ball size. It wasn't very big at all. And then at the last second, it veered off to the right and went past the passenger window. And the girl that was in the passenger window, you know, we looked at each other in the passenger seat. I mean, we looked at each other and we're like, we just saw a UFO. Like, that's definitely a UFO. And that was like a crazy close encounter because I thought it was going to hit the car.
Yeah.
I would have turned around if I wasn't on a freeway and tried to follow it.
Yeah.
But the other thing that was weird about it was it wasn't what you would expect it to look like. It looked more like a jellyfish, like almost translucent, not a real definitive shape, seemed to have like color to it as well. And then the next thing you know, like, that friend of mine and I, we both became aware of that Thrive movie where he's talking about Taurus.
The Taurus field. That's right.
We saw that. We were like, that kind of looks like what the ship looked like, one of these Tauruses. So
yeah. So I love asking this, and I'm excited to hear what your answer on this. You know. And I don't know if you ever heard me ask anyone this. If you haven't made it through a whole podcast, you haven't, which is cool, because I'll be able to surprise you with it. If not, maybe you did. But you know, if you were transitioning into the next existence, into the next incarnation, or you were taken off, I don't really think you'd go anywhere. I know how much you love your family, but if you were leaving on a UFO with them But you had an opportunity to kind of speak to the hearts of every human being on this planet and get a message through to them, and they would really hear you. You know, what would you say to them? What would you give them?
Well, I mean, I could say something really trite, like, you know, love yourselves and love other people. But that's like, it's so much easier, like you said, it's easier said than done. But something that really can help everyone and has worked for me to such an extent that I can't deny how important it is for people to shut off their devices, you know, shut off your phone, your computer, your everything. Go sit in nature, close your eyes and breathe. Like, just tune in. Please, please know what it is that's going on inside of you. Because I feel like I walked around for years not even realizing how anxious I was. Mm-hmm. Not even, like, that anxiety was just, like, you ask the fish, how's the water? You know, like, I just, it was kind of like, maybe I think I knew that I was more anxious than a lot of people around me. Like, I could see friends and be like, well, he doesn't seem to have a problem at all with being self-conscious, or, you know, but we're all carrying something. We're all carrying some sort of weight. And for me, it was definitely anxiety. And before I really tuned in to what was going on inside of myself and started to breathe consciously and meditate, you know, the life was a lot harder. Yeah. And, you know, everything that I am today and everything that I do, and the fact I get to do this for a living, this channeling stuff, it's all because I meditated, I'm sure. You know what I mean? Like, I've been meditating for 20 years, and I feel like it's the best thing that you can do. And it will lead to you being able to love yourself and appreciate others and connect with animals, which is so important, and connect with earth, which is so important, and other people, and have compassion and all these things. That is really, I think, the one thing that if you can do it, if you can find minutes, a few minutes even to do it, wake up a little earlier, do it when you're falling asleep, anything, you know, make sure you're connecting within, because every, you know how in the future they show on sci-fi movies and shows, like the future is like all electronic billboards everywhere and stuff.
Yeah.
We're getting to that point now where like everything is trying to get your attention.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to get your eyes, your clicks, you know, and it's going to keep going in that direction to get you to focus outside of yourself, but you've got to pay attention to what's going on in here, because otherwise it'll wreak havoc.
Yeah, man, you'll be lost. Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I'm so glad I asked you, because, you know, I think it was a great answer, man. It's very helpful. And, I am inclined to agree with you. You know, it's changed my life. It's made my life a lot easier. And, you know, it's like, it's even hard to tell people to meditate these days. Even that has become like, I don't know. It's like there's all this political correctness around telling anyone to do anything these days. But at the same time, you know, people want to know what the secret is.
Right.
You know, and so the secret is learning to find the joy of going within. I believe that, you know, that's what changed my life. That's what got, you know, I was filled with a lot of self-loathing, I was so unkind to myself for so many years. And I came from a similar background as you, you know, very Catholic, very guilt ridden, a lot of hell and brimstone, and, you know, like learning to shame myself for what are just natural things that human beings have a desire to connect with and be, you know, experience. And meditation really helped me get over all that and quiet that voice, and eventually just kind of toss that voice, which is amazing. And it's helped me be a better, you know, a better father, a better person, a better everything. So I'm glad you said what you said, because, you know, I could say it and it wouldn't be the same as it coming from you, man.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
Absolutely, man. I mean, and it was awesome talking to you. I could talk to you for hours, Daniel, because there's just so much to cover, man. You know, there's a whole universe and one on top of that, another one on top of that to talk about. But, you know, we'll have to do it again someday when your schedule allows, and, you know, we'll check back on things and get you back on, man. But I appreciate your time. I know how busy you are. So thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
Yeah, bro. Well, you take care, Daniel. My best to your family. And thanks for... how old is your daughter now?
She's about to turn 17 months.
So, okay. I was going to say, tell your daughter we said thanks for letting us steal dad. I know she's on a...
But I heard her. She just got up.
Cool. Well, the timing is perfect then. All right, brother. Man, thanks so much, Daniel. Appreciate it, man. Thank you for everything.
Thanks for having me.